Well, kia ora everyone, it's Stephen Moe here from Seeds Podcast. I got an invite to speak at my former high school. It was quite fun going back and, you know, looking around, seeing everybody in green uniforms, which I used to wear as well. And reflecting on it, I was talking to students in like year 12, year 13, so 16 years old, 17 years old, and I realized that that is like 30 years ago for me. And the topic I was asked to reflect on 30 years after I was sitting in their seats was creativity. What have I learned about creativity and how to infuse it into my life and how to use it even in my work? So that was the theme, Reflections on Creativity. I hope that this audio of the recording is a helpful one. Obviously, I was speaking, I think there was about 55 students who came along to listen. And I tried to make it as interactive as possible. I wonder in your life, what is it that creativity means for you? I'd love to find out. Drop me a note or send me an email or in social media, leave a comment. So I'm going to make a video of this as well because I recorded it that way. But this is the audio of me sharing about my reflections on creativity.
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah.
All right. Hope you've got your laptops out, your notebook, whatever you use now to take notes already, because we have the privilege of hearing from Stephen Moe now. He's obviously recording and doing his... Are you recording?
Yeah, I'm recording.
Okay. All right, so he will tell you his story a bit, so I don't need to elaborate on that because he will do a way better job than me. But Stephen, it's fantastic to have you with us this morning. And take it away.
All right. Well, tēnā koutou katoa, nō mea ka hō nō te tematanga, ko te taita tōku manga, ko waitaki tōku awa, ko otatahi tōku kainga inai nei, e roi o tōku tunga mahi o Perryfield Lawyers, ko Stephen Moe tōku ingoa, nō reira nami hi kia koutou katoa. Hey, it's great to be here. I'm really excited for this morning. I've been looking forward to it. And I'm going to share with you a little bit about creativity. And I think today it's about hearing different perspectives, right? Like hearing from different people and hearing about what their approaches are to creativity. And so I'm really looking forward to it. Can we get my slides up? It's on there? Okay, cool. So I just want to share a little bit.
It was?
I'm just going to share a little bit about myself. So as soon as I opened my mouth and I started talking, you heard something, right? What was it?
Accent.
An accent, yeah. So I have an accent. But you have to be careful with accents because they don't always reveal everything about a person. So in my case, I'm from America originally. I was born there, but my parents moved us as a family in 1983 to New Zealand. So I was only 7 years old. So I actually grew up here in New Zealand. This was my home right from a very young age. So I have an accent, but this is my place. And not only that, this is a little photo. That's me there as a young person, like 10 years old or so. But I have a direct connection with every single one of you in this room. Did you know that? Yeah. It's something that I share with you for better, for worse, the green. So this is me exactly 30 years ago in 1994. So I came to this school, I think I was in seventh form at that point, and I was very familiar with this school. In fact, Mr. Van Oort back there was a teacher at that time, one of the young teachers, I think, at that time, like 30, yeah, 30 years has gone by. But the point is that I am really familiar with this school. I went to school here. I share something with you. And so what I want to do in this session is tell you what I have learned in the last 30 years since I was sitting in your seat. And I hope that I can download some of the things that I've learned about creativity and in my own life, what that's meant. And I'm going to tell you the truth, nothing but the truth. I have nothing to gain by trying to invent things, right? Like, I'm going to tell you everything that I have learned. And I welcome your questions. I welcome if you've got any comments, because I can be here as someone who was you 30 years ago. So here's a really weird thought, right? What's life going to be like for each of you in 30 years from now? Can you do the maths? How old will you be? Takes a minute, right? 40-something? Yeah. So I'm 47 now. I'm actually really happy to be the age I am. A lot of people make jokes, you know, like, oh, are you 21 again? But I actually think being able to get older is a privilege. And I say that because I'm sure you've all met people who haven't been able to get older. They've had cancer or they've been in accidents and things. So it's an honor to get older. So I'm here 30 years after when I was sitting in your seats. And what I want to share with you is a little bit about creativity. So myself, I actually work as a lawyer. If any of you are wondering, maybe you want to study the law, by the way, or you want to become a lawyer, after this or at some point, I'm really happy to talk with any of you and tell you what I know. So basically, I went to Canterbury University, and I studied and became a lawyer, and then I worked for New Zealand's largest law firm. It's called Russell McVeigh. I was in Wellington, and I spent 3 years there. And then I left New Zealand and I moved to London. And I worked for 3 years in London. And then I can speak Japanese, so I moved to Tokyo. And I was based there for 4 years. And then after Tokyo, I moved to Sydney. And I was based there for 4 years. And then came back here 8 years ago. So that's been my career, is I've been a lawyer for 20 years. So you might think this is kind of weird, like why is a lawyer here to talk to us about creativity? But I have deliberately tried to weave in creativity into my work, into what I do as a lawyer. So that's what sets me apart from maybe other lawyers, is that I'm always thinking, how can I bring creativity? How can I bring a bit of fun into what I'm doing? So some of the ways that I do that, like it was mentioned, I've got some podcasting gear here, and that's because I do a podcast interviewing inspiring people. I've talked to 383 people over the last few years. My interviews go for an hour, and I'm trying to get into the depths of what motivates people. So I just interviewed someone named Tatipene O'Regan, quite a famous Ngāi Tahu elder statesman. I spoke to him for 2 hours about what motivates him. So that podcast has kept me busy. So that's an example of, yes, I'm a lawyer, but I'm also able to do something that's creative. It's been listened to like 250,000 times now. Lots of people come up and they say now, oh, are you the guy who does the podcast? So it's a creative outlet that's separate from being a lawyer. The other thing I do is I do lots of writing. At the end of the session, if you're lucky, and if you ask me some good questions, I might read you this little book. So I just wrote this book, and it looks like a children's book, but how many of you remember primary school when the teacher would read you a story? It's kind of comforting, right? So we're going to get the chance to do that at the end of this session. Yeah, story time. And I've actually brought a copy of this book, one to give to each of you, so that you can take it away with you. Oh, the bell is there. Ah, the memories come flooding back. Yeah, so I've got a box of books here, and I'd like to give one to each of you. If you want to get in the good books with your mom or dad, go home and say, Mom and Dad, I got this for you. A little gift. But I've written other books as well. So this is a book which is called Seed Habits. It's everything I've learned from doing the interviews on Seed's podcast. So I'm going to mention that. This is a little novel called The Wordsmiths. It's written for kind of 11, 12-year-olds. This one here is about what could the future of business be if we reimagined it. So what if business wasn't just about profit? What if it was about purpose? That would change how you approach business, wouldn't it? It's not just about the money, it's about the impact. And then this one is one I did on the Mo family, which is my family name, all of my grandparents, great-grandparents and stuff. So I've written lots of things. So that's the writing bit. I do lots of different videos and things. I love painting. I love writing poetry. So it's okay to be professional, to do whatever it is that you do and be creative. And the amazing part is if you can weave in the creativity into what you do, so that whatever you end up doing in your careers or your jobs or as a parent, you're always thinking, how can I bring creativity into this? So let's learn from two people. That's the book. Oh, this picture here, I just want to show you. Who knows what this is? It's an airplane, right? And what do you think the red dots represent? So everybody, yeah, do you know?
Bullet holes.
Bullet holes. Now don't give it away, because you might have heard the story. This represents an airplane that used to fly in World War II. And the airplanes would go out from England, they'd do their bombing missions, and they'd come back. And the engineers were really clever. What they would do is they would mark wherever there was a bullet hole in the airplane. So look at all the places that this airplane got shot. All through the wings, all down here at the back, like, oh my goodness. There's so many places in this airplane that we need to make stronger. Look at all these holes. So the engineers were like designing, how can we make all the places where there are red spots, we gotta make them stronger to protect people. But then there was someone who came, actually a mathematician came and said, you're looking at this picture the wrong way, because you're looking at the holes of the planes that made it back. What about the planes that did not make it back? You're having survivor bias. So when you look at this image, you're seeing the what you thought were the weak points. Actually, those are the strong points. Because if you think about it, where are there no red dots? Where's the pilot sit, right? If your pilot gets shot, you're going down. The engine, if the engine gets shot, you're going down. So you had to look at this image and change your perspective, a paradigm shift of thinking to say, actually, where there is danger is where there are no red dots. And I think in your lives, I'm really happy to input at this point, because you're all at this, you know, starting out age. If you can grasp something of what I say today and go out, it might be like a paradigm shift of thinking that actually I can bring creativity into everything that I do. So I'm wondering if you can turn to the person next to you. I want you to say to each other, what do you think creativity is? Okay, we had a bit of an intro before, but just 20, 30 seconds each, so a minute in total, what is creativity? Might be three of you at the end if you don't match up. What is creativity? What do we think? Any ideas? What's creativity, just from the room? Yep.
Emotion-based thoughts.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
Okay.
We'll go to that in a second. Any other thoughts? What's creativity? Yep.
Coming up with original and unique ideas.
Coming up with original and unique ideas. Yeah, I like that definition. Yep, something that's your own. I think that's one of the key things, is that each one of you is an individual. Each one of you has a different way of thinking, and that is where your creativity can come out, and you can actually bring yourself to whatever you do. Any final ones? What is creativity? So we're going to watch a video now. Just have a look and see this person. See if you recognize them as well.
See your dream.
That's enough of that one. Okay, who is that? Yeah, Justin Bieber. That's one of the first recordings ever of Justin Bieber, because he was out busking in Canada, and he would just play the guitar. Actually, kind of interesting. Were you listening to the lyrics? Yeah, interesting. There's a whole other story there. But yeah, let's listen to person number two.
This is a song I wrote yesterday, and it's about a girl who's just different. And I really like it because it's just so happy. So this is called Lucky You.
So we know who that was? Oh, we can watch another thing. Yeah, so that was Taylor Swift, right? Age 13. So why am I showing you clips of Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift at a really young age getting out and performing? Apart from kind of funny to see the hairstyles and like what did they look like? So at a young age, they're out doing something, right? Like Justin Bieber was found busking on the street, and then there ended up being this big sort of bidding about who would sign him. I think Usher signed him. But the point is, he had to go out on the street and busk, and it takes a bit of bravery to do that, doesn't it? Has anybody ever done busking before or gone out? Yeah. It's, you have to be not afraid. You have to think about what you're doing, but not in a self-conscious way. And so looking at those two who've been very successful with their creative careers, you can actually see it quite early on. They had a spark of something that was pushing them to do it. Taylor Swift, age 13, she's writing a song and then she's performing it. Justin Bieber out in the street singing. So I think that's really interesting for all of you at a young age to realize. It takes a bit of effort and a bit of courage to be creative, to go out and express yourself. But that's what people who are successful are able to do. They're able to overcome the anxiety that might come otherwise. All right, so I just want to run through a couple things that I wish someone had told me when I was your age. Nobody told me this stuff, and I wish that they had. So if I could go back in time and give myself a bit of advice when it comes to creativity, I've written 6 things that I think are really good to know. And I hope that this is helpful for you in your journey thinking about creativity and your work. So the first one is that you're unique and you have something to give. And the counterpart of that is that someone needs to hear it. I think too often we question ourselves, but actually your backgrounds, your family circumstances, your culture, everything that has shaped you has made you into a unique person. And I like that definition before, that creativity is doing something with your own uniqueness. And the second part of it that nobody ever told me until quite late on is that there's always someone who needs what only you can provide or only you can do. And I remember, I think I was 22 or so, and I was starting to write a story. Like, I like writing. You could probably tell that. I liked writing this story, and I was writing it, and I was feeling like nobody's ever going to read this story. It's not really relevant. And then I was talking with a friend of mine, and he said, you know what? I would read your story. And if I would read it, I bet you there's a bunch of other people that would like to read it. There's a guy named Seth Godin from America, and he talks about building up a tribe of people who are your tribe, the ones who really love what you do. So you can actually, if you're creative and you're doing something, whether that's painting or writing or dancing or singing or drama or whatever it is that you're into, you can develop a group of people who resonate and like what you do. Like with the podcast, like I get people listening to it from all over the world. I never would have thought that was something that would work, but it does. So that's my first thing, is that you are unique. You do have something to give. The second thing, which I hope you're getting, is that you can be creative, whatever it is that you do. So some of you are going to end up in all different career paths. Some of you will be teachers. You'll be, like me, a lawyer maybe. You'll be out building houses. You'll be electricians. You'll be, like, there's so many amazing careers and things that you can do. Approach that with the positiveness of it, like there's an opportunity for me to contribute and do something. But whatever you do, you can be creative with it as well. You can bring your individuality as well. So I'm an employer, like I work at a law firm called Perry Field Lawyers. We have about 80 people in our law firm. And when we're looking to bring new graduates in, or we're looking for people to hire, what are some of the qualities you think that we're looking for? Well, one of them is initiative. Showing that you have a proactive attitude. The best graduates who we hire are the ones who come in and I give them a task to do. I'm like, oh, could you write this memo on this particular legal case, right? And they come back and they say, Stephen, I wrote the summary that you wanted. Here it is. Then I was thinking, you know, you're probably going to have to email this to the client. And the client is going to need to have a summary of the memo. So I went ahead and I wrote a summary that you can now copy-paste for your email. Like, wow, that's impressive. That proactivity of doing more than you're asked for. Always be asking, how can I add value to the task that I've been given? Actually doing more than I was asked for. I think you'll find that that's a principle in all of life that will set you apart. Think of your teachers. If they ask you to do something and you do what they ask you and a little bit more, like, people are going to remember that. So if you can build that into your life as something, everything you do, how can I add value? How can I do even more than has been requested? The third thing, the principle about creativity, I think, it's called give it all. Give it now. So there's an author who I love named Annie Dillard. She wrote a book which won a Pulitzer Prize, which is quite a big prize in America. And this comes from her, so I'm stealing her idea. Give it all, give it now. Why don't you turn to the person next to you? What do you think that I'm trying to get across with that statement? What does that mean, do you think? All right, what do we think? Give it all, give it now. What does that mean? Yep.
Don't wait.
Don't wait. Yeah, don't wait. Don't pull back. Yep.
Don't procrastinate or overthink it.
Yep. Yep. Good. Yep.
Don't expect a different opportunity to come along or like wait for something else.
Right. So if there's something available, get on with it. Yep.
Be spontaneous.
Be spontaneous, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are all great principles, and I'm glad that you're actually listening because that shows in your responses. I think for me, the phrase that she's using there, give it all, give it now, is very often, if you're creative, you will have an idea. And let's say you're writing a story or something, or you're writing a poem, or you're painting, or whatever the creative outlet is. You get this idea and you think, oh, instead of putting it in this story, I'm going to save it for a future story. And what she's saying in this principle is, don't save the good stuff for later. Put it in what you're doing right now. And the principle that she has is it's like a spring or a well of water, the creative ideas will keep coming. You have to use them as you get them. So give it all, give it now. In other words, use what you've got. Don't store it up and put it in a shelf. The other principle that I've learned, this is not in the slides, but I'm going to tell you anyway because I wish someone had told me this. It's actually called the Pareto principle. It's called the 80-20 principle. Has anybody heard of 80-20 before? Basically, what it says is it takes 20% of the work to get to 80% of the product. And it takes 80% of work to do the final 20%. So in other words, I know that's a bit mind-bending, but the let's say a task takes 2 hours. You're probably going to do it to this standard. To get it to perfection is going to take you 8 hours. So in other words, like that principle, just do it. Just get on with it and be satisfied without having to always reach a perfection status. So it means that you can move more content, you can move more things more quickly. So that's something that, yeah, nobody told me about when I was younger, so I'm sharing it with you. The fourth one, I just put here, upskill yourself. And this is something that when I was younger, I didn't really understand. But life is not going to be handed you on a platter, right? Life, it's not like, oh, here you go, you're a great person, here's your dream job. Oh, here you go, you like sports, well, here's the selection into the Canterbury Rams. You know, it doesn't work like that. It actually takes a lot of effort and a lot of time to be able to excel at what you do. So this principle is just, you have to be devoted and thinking about upskilling yourself in order to become able to do the creative work of whatever it is that you want to do. And looking around the room, you might be wondering, you know, I'm not a leader, I don't lead other people, but my challenge to each of you is that you are a leader. You're a leader of at least one person. And that is yourself. So you are responsible for yourself and what it is that you are doing. Nobody else at the end of your life is going to come and say, you know, there was someone there. It's up to you. You've got to take hold of opportunities and upskill yourself. And I love this phrase, become the type of person that you would like to meet. So what I mean by that is, who are the people looking around that you go, oh, that's an interesting person. They are doing something that I'm really interested in. What is it about them that sets them apart? And how can you become the type of person that is like that? So you might look around and go, wow, that person speaks 3 languages? Oh my goodness. Well, they didn't speak 3 languages when they were a baby. How did they get to that point? So you also, if you like meeting people who speak more than one language, why not upskill yourself and start learning another language? That's just one example. You can apply it to all different principles, all different things in life. All right, and then I'm just testing you on your numbering ability, because we got number 6 next. Innovators think creatively. So when it comes to work, when it comes to your job, you're going to be faced with lots of challenges. And whatever it is that you do, there's going to be situations where you're not sure how to approach things. And I think that's where being creative and being innovative is really going to set you apart from everybody else. I loved when I walked in, I was hearing about how do you get creative, what do you do? Do you know some of the best ideas I've had have come when I'm not sitting at my desk in front of the computer screen. I wrote a book called Social Enterprise in New Zealand, a legal handbook, and I got the idea for that when I was skiing at Mount Hutt. And I was looking out all over the beautiful mountains, and it was a nice day, and I was thinking to myself, I've written quite a lot of articles about this topic of business and profit and purpose. I wonder if I took like those 10 articles and I put them all together, that's a book. And that was the origin of writing the book, which then means that I've gotten to meet lots of different people because, oh, he wrote a book about it. He must know what he's doing. And therefore, I've done lots of work in that area. The point is that approaching problems creatively means that you're going to be innovative. And the final one, for those who love sports, there's different people who've said this. Michael Jordan said it. A guy named Wayne Gretzky, a hockey guy, said it. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take, which I kind of like. I actually played a lot of basketball when I was at Middleton Grange. This was way back, 1994. We were the first team that went undefeated in a season. So it kind of, before that, Middleton Grange was a real rugby sort of school. And then that was the year that it kind of poofed off into like basketball origins. So I was part of those teams. But I know, I understand what they're saying there is, if you're on the court and you do not shoot the ball, there's no chance it's gonna go in. So you have to be a little bit willing to take risk. Because if you shoot the ball, it might go out, but it might go in. So be willing to try things and do things. So I'm not gonna go through all of these because this is the principles that I've learned. I might leave a copy of this book here, and then if you're interested, you've got a little library there. You can come back at a lunchtime if you want to. It literally would take 15 minutes to read. It's extremely small. Books don't have to be big. In fact, some of the best books are small. Don't feel like you have to write a textbook when you're writing. But this has a bunch of principles that I've learned from talking to the guests. And then I wanted to kind of get towards the end of my part of the talk, and because I'd love to hear any questions that you got, and then I am going to read you the little story, okay? But this is a picture. I took this photo when I was flying down to Queenstown looking down at the river. I think that's the Rakaia River going over it. And New Zealand's really unique with rivers. Rivers in most countries are just like one channel, and they go where they go. But we have these braided rivers, and they're always changing. So if we flew over this river and took the same photo, do you think it would look the same? No, it's changed. So this is my reflection. Braided rivers in New Zealand are unique as they change often, moving along in the same direction, but never ever staying exactly the same. Trying to plan every aspect of your life means you will miss out if you try to stay in one channel of the river only. To really see new opportunities, you have to be willing to also let directions shift like a braided river and go where the waters of new opportunities are flowing. So the river ends up in the same place in the ocean, right? But how it gets there might change. So in your life, things might not work out in a particular thing that you're trying. Have the opportunity mindset of saying, well, that thing didn't work, but I'm just going to switch in the river, and this is just a bend in the river that's taking me here, and now I'm continuing down the road here. I think too often we get caught up in, it didn't work out, therefore I will never be able to do it. Like if some of you did want to become lawyers, you might study the law and then you apply and you don't get a job as a lawyer. It's like, oh, that didn't work. But if you have persistence, maybe there's an opportunity to work over here in a company as a lawyer, and then you can try something else, and then eventually you're able to come back if you have the determination. So yeah, it's just a picture that I really like of braided rivers. And then this is the apple tree. Has anybody got any questions or comments or thoughts about what I'm sharing? Does any of that sort of resonate or make sense or not make sense? Yeah.
You talked about lots of the creative enterprises that you've been a part of, and lots of those are things that you started up yourself. How do you find being creative when somebody like requests that of you, when you have to be creative on demand?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you do that or how you find that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So how do you come alongside someone else who's asked you to input? Yeah, I think you have to do it sensitively because it might be their idea and they might just want you to create the widget that is needed. But most people that I know who are creative or are doing things differently or innovatively, if they see a kindred spirit, in other words, someone who is bringing a spark of originality, usually they'll encourage it and they'll say, oh, you think we should do it this other way? Sure, let's try it. So I guess it's partly being willing, like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift, to put yourself out there, to propose something, to do things differently, and then asking if they are willing to take it on board. If they're not, if they're shutting you down, then maybe it's not the right place for you either, because you want people who are going to encourage you. In the principles, one of the things that I've learned is you need heat for seeds to grow. In other words, you need encouraging people around you, finding people who can not tear you down, not bring you down, but actually lift you up. I mean, honestly, if each of you, all of you, whether you know it or not, you are part of a little ecosystem. And your ecosystem of you go to the school, you're all about the same age. Like, if you could have a mindset of lifting each other up instead of, hopefully doesn't happen, but tearing each other down or things like that, then it would actually change the whole tone and nature of your groups. The other thing is that, again, whether you like it or not, you're going to have relationships with some of these people in the room for most of your life. Like, I actually know some of the people that I went to high school with still. They're still good friends. So, you know, being aware that who you are and what you do matters even now is really important. Yeah, I hope that helps to answer a little bit. The other thing to remember, sitting behind all of this, is it's about becoming mature in yourself and confident in yourself and aware of who you are. I think that's a principle that applies to all of us. And don't look for completion in another person. Become complete in who you are and confident in who you are, because that will then allow you to have full relationships with other people. So you're not looking for completion in a friend or another group or a partner or, you know, a relationship. You're actually confident and aware of who you are. That's something that most people don't realize till they're like 30 years old. So if you can take any point from what I say, that would probably make a big difference in your life. Become who you are and confident in who you are, not seeking completion from external other people. Any other questions or comments? Yeah?
Have you ever seen a really bad person's fear
of how jealous they were of other people? I've seen people get bitter before where they felt like other people were succeeding and they were better. And it's like a poison that seeps into who they are. So my advice is there's always going to be someone who's better than you, right? Just have to say it. There's going to be someone who's a better singer, who's better at basketball, who's better at academics, who's better, like literally, there's always somebody out there who's going to be really good. And you can never, just don't compare yourself to those people. Compare yourself to you, to who you are, and all that you can be. Your responsibility is to become the best version of yourself, not comparing to someone else. There was a quote that I heard, which I really liked. Someone at the end of their life, they're basically on their deathbed, and they're saying, when I get standing in front of God one day, God's not going to say, why weren't you like this other person who did amazing things? They're going to say, so in my case, they're going to say, Stephen Moe, why didn't you reach your full potential. Like, that's what each of us have a responsibility to do as a person, to become the best version of who you are. So each of you are being shaped, whether you know it or not. There's various forces which are shaping you. The fact that you can understand the language that I'm using right now is shaping who you are, the culture that you're in, the friends, the family, it's all there. What will you choose to have shape you? What are the influences that you will allow to shape who you are becoming? There's a version of you which is 47 years old, 30 years from now, and there's a version which has creativity infused in their work and is happy in what they're doing and is connected in their community. And there's a version of you, like the person that you're talking about, who became bitter because they didn't achieve what they'd set their heart on and didn't see things as opportunities but saw them as closed doors. And that, so there's different alternate versions of who you will become. It's up to you to choose to become the best version of yourself. So, yeah. Any, you had a question?
Yeah, I got two.
Yeah, sure.
So, my first question is, as a Christian, I'm assuming you're a Christian, how would you explain the ethics of a lawyer and like how you choose to deal with that? Because I understand you might get some jobs that might clash with your personal beliefs.
Yeah. Well, the way it works for a lawyer is that we have professional obligations. So it means basically we're there. You might not get this from movies or TV, but we are there to promote justice, and we're actually there to help society. So it's not just about how much money can I make. I'm actually there to help people. So I'm a particular type of lawyer. I don't go to court. I'm a lawyer who's kind of behind the scenes. Someone comes and they want to set up a charity or they want to set up a business, I help them do that, which I really love because it's like catalyzing impact. I can't feed 1,000 children, but I can help a person who sets up a charity that feeds 1,000 children. So basically, from a professional perspective, I might not agree with the belief system or the what the client is asking me to do, but there's a principle of access to justice that lawyers need to be available for people to come and get help. And so ultimately that's like trumps over what I personally might believe. It depends on what it is though. There is a little bit of discretion, yeah. And your second question?
You talked about like stuff about things employers were looking for, and you mentioned like, you know, you're starting to add value to. Do you think there's anything else like particular other than creativity, leadership, and like other basic stuff?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. What else do employers look for? I mean, I can tell you at the law firm, like we have 80 staff and we're always needing new people because people are leaving or we're growing. We're in a growing phase of our law firm. So we're always looking for people, and the attributes that we're looking for is that sort of proactive attitude. Like, but the other things that we're looking for is this person a team player? Like, are they just gonna show up at 8:30, put on headphones, and sit there and do their work all day, take the headphones off, and leave? Or are they gonna, like in my team, the press has this like daily quiz, and so they get together and sit there and do the quiz together as a team. You know, so can you be a team player rather than I'm an individual? It's becoming more and more important that you're able to work together with other people. So you might be super brilliant, your IQ tops the charts, but you can't talk to people. Like, you're gonna struggle. So there's IQ is one aspect of life, but EQ is equally important, emotional intelligence. Being able to listen to someone talking, understand what they've said, and actively feedback what they just said, that's a real skill. It's actually not something they really teach you in university and tertiary, ADA, and those places. I think they actually need a whole course called emotional intelligence or interpersonal relationships and things, because it's a really, really important part of what you'll end up doing. Not just in work, just in life. The other thing that I would suggest that you all practice, I know it's scary, but standing up in front of people and talking and presenting, because those are skills that will be applicable and helpful for everything you do. If you think about it, if you're in a meeting with one other person or two other people, what are you doing? You're basically performing or providing an overview of things. Speaking clearly is really an important thing. So, yeah, I was lucky because I was an English teacher in Japan for a year in Osaka, and so I learned to kind of speak clearly. Like, you can hear my, I kind of enunciate all of my words, right? But that's a skill I got from 9 months teaching English. But it's really helpful now when I'm doing my podcasting and interviewing and, you know, presenting or talking in front of people. So, yeah, just all these skills you can actually develop. Next time you have a spare couple minutes, like, there's so many resources out there that you could actually watch a video on how to do this or how to do that. Lots of good skills that you can learn. Again, no one's going to hand you on the plate. Who are you becoming? It's up to you. You are the driver of your life. So it's up to you what you become, what you focus on, and what you ultimately will stand for. Any other ones? Yep.
Like, you do a podcast and you write blogs. How do you know, like, when an idea is worth developing and when an idea is maybe just
not worth developing? Yeah, so how do I know when an idea is worth developing and when it's just leave it aside? I guess this is part of that creative spark thing, is usually if I get an idea, it will almost give me energy, and I'll feel like that's something I want to do. And then, in a way, I just do it, because if it's giving me energy, that's the more important thing, rather than this is going to get read by 1,000 people or something. I feel like it's important, like, you're the vessel, you're the channel of that creative energy, and your responsibility is to get the pen out and write, rather than judging necessarily whether it will be a success or not. So I mentioned how many times the podcast has been listened to, you know, like hundreds of thousands of times, but for me, it would be a success even if only 100 people had listened to it, because I've learned so much talking to people. I interviewed one guy, he had terminal brain cancer. We knew he would be dead 3 months after that. So I sat with him and I recorded his voice telling me his whole life story, and he died. And his son then wrote to me a month after that and said, thank you so much. We now have 45 minutes of my father sharing about his life that we can share with his grandchildren who are not yet born. And so it's like, okay, the whole thing is worth it just for that one impact. So don't judge the creative endeavors necessarily by volume of hits or clicks or eyeballs that saw it. Judge it by the integrity of the art that you're bringing to it. That's my advice. Yeah?
Just for the things that you've created and all that, my question is, have you ever experienced any burnout or frustration, like, in terms of the creative process? And if so, what's the best way you're kind of getting over that?
Yeah, so have I had burnout or creative exhaustion? I think my feeling is that once you get started on a creative life or a creative path, that it almost is, the energy will keep rising up. So I like the image of a spring. Has anybody ever been like to the Poopoo Springs up near Nelson? Like, it's just this continual flow of water coming. And so I like to think that if we are channeling our creativity into what we do, work, study, relationships, everything, that it will continue to keep rising up. And the problem isn't so much that you do too much, it's that you do too little, because it's almost like stopping the spring and not allowing it. So my encouragement would be to just keep allowing it to come out. So I haven't suffered from creative burnout or exhaustion, because but maybe this is part of it. Find things that you love. Find things you really want to do. And I think that's an important part. Like, I've kind of mentioned the main creative ways, you know, like writing and poetry and singing and stuff, but creativity can be infused in everything, all things that you do. Like we bought this little batch up near Darfield, and I thought, how can I make this a creative place of rest and retreat? So I've got these big giant posts of wood, and I painted them red, and then I put a black on the top, and it's like totally unnecessary. Like he said, why would you paint these posts red? But to me, it's like a symbol of when you come here, it will be a place of rest and creativity. So doing things that are a bit random, but you want to do it, so you do it. It's fun. I think that's important. Yeah, having fun is a really big part of this, too. You have to enjoy what you're doing. Yeah?
That's right. What tips would you give for running a podcast?
For running a podcast, I've actually done a podcast about running a podcast. So come up after as I'll give you a link and you can listen to it. My tips are, again, do what you love. So my podcast is interviewing inspiring people. And I love talking with inspiring people. Some of you might say, well, I love drama. And therefore, I'm going to do a podcast about drama. I'm going to go interview Mr. McCormick, who was a teacher when I was here too, by the way. and I'm going to do a podcast featuring people who love drama. It's actually a really good way, if you think about it. If you wanted to get into drama, if you, as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old, started a podcast about drama, and you went and you interviewed the directors of the shows that are going on in Canterbury, like at the Court Theatre or something, and you said, I'm doing a podcast about drama, I want to talk to you, all of a sudden you're getting to meet all the influential people within that whole world. Or it might be completely different. You love motorcycles. I'm going to do a podcast about motorcycles. I'm going to talk with the racers and, you know, mechanics. And so find something that you love if you do want to do podcasting. Yeah. Great. Well, can I read you a story? Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. So this is a story called The Apple Tree. So as I read it, can you just take a deep breath? And I want you to imagine that you're kind of in like a valley. And there's no cars, there's no buildings. It's just a green valley. And it's sloping down. And then there's a little stream that runs down the middle of the valley. And there's lots of birds singing. They're flying around. And there's flowers in the field. So just listen as I read this story and imagine what it would be like to be this apple tree. Sometimes people tell me they find it helpful to like close their eyes and almost like meditate or think about it. So if that's for you, then that's fine. So this story starts with part one, spring. I remember the small boy who used to visit me in the summer. He planted me here one day with his grandmother. They were exploring and they ended up in this valley so far out of the way. I overheard the grandmother say that she had come to this same spot with her own grandparents many years before. They planted me beside this slow-moving stream that drifts lazily by, tossing light back up into my branches like confetti. I've long ago given up trying to work out what there might be to celebrate here. The stream itself babbles constantly, but it can't hold much of a conversation. Instead, it speaks over and over of rocks and sand, of fish and frogs, of eddies and flows. But I'm grateful for the stream, for my roots found it long ago, and much of the surrounding land is parched in the summer. If I hadn't been laid down so carefully to grow on its banks, I might have withered long ago. Let's see what happens, the grandmother said slowly. Through the soil that they placed on me, I heard their footsteps retreating. Part two, summer. I can't tell you much about the next few years as I emerged from seed to leaf to small tree. The boy returned during the summer and pruned me as I grew larger. He would often just sit there beside me or lean against me as I grew. Only a few times did his grandmother join him, and I watched as she grew older more quickly than the boy and I grew up. They had long talks there sitting beneath me, and I listened in to each one. They talked of the past, of the present, of the future. I recall the final time I saw the grandmother as she struggled to her feet, leaning on a walking stick after sitting down under my shade. When the boy came the next summer, he was even more reflective than he had been on earlier visits, and he sat there, just watching the water flow by. He was thinking, throwing small stones, and listening to their sound, being still and silent. The last time I saw the boy, he had grown into a man. I was proud because I had started to produce some apples, and I saw him grab one and eat it. Then I noticed that he had in his hands an axe. I shivered as he drew even closer and raised it. He used it to hack at me, and after several deep cuts, he took off the branch that was growing out and away from the stream. He had shifted my angles, and this left me only to droop out over the water. I felt like he'd cut off an arm, and I resented it. The apples that had been on the branch lay scattered on the ground. Even then, I knew that this was going to determine my destiny in some way. The man cut away at the branch lying there, unattached, and yet so intimately connected to me, until he had fashioned the straightest part into a walking stick. Was that all I was useful for? I felt a great betrayal, yet before he left, he stood up before me. The wind went quiet, the birds in my branches stopped singing, and the sun shone brighter. I take a piece of you to guide me, he said. He addressed me so formally that despite my indignity, I bowed to him as best I could. Then he was gone to live his life, leaving me alone. Part 3, Autumn. As time went by, the seasons were my only companions. They stayed long enough to feel comfortable with each other, not like the small birds that flew in and out so quickly that I couldn't even focus on them. In the winters, the snow that fell chilled me deeply, but the serene silence that resulted was worth it. Spring saw me grow again and push out new blossoms, each one representing a possible future. In the summers, my apples grew and grew larger in the sun. I was proud of them, and as the days shortened, they fell from me. I was most upset in the autumns, for by taking part of me away, the man had left only one place for the apples I produced to fall. The stream gratefully received each of them, making a sound as they slipped into the water like divers. All I could do was watch them drift away downstream and around the bend. It made me sad to see them leave. At that time of year, I resented the man greatly. Although as a boy he had given me life and looked after me, he had also destroyed my chances for a friend, since no tree could grow there with me. All those possible companions were swept downstream to nothingness. I kept asking myself why this had happened to me. Part 4, Winter. The years rolled by, and each year my resentment grew with my height. My bark had become knobbled and rough. I was old now. Yet still I produced fruit each season, hoping that one day they might land beside me and grow there. I towered high above the stream, but my wish was not granted. The apples dropped each time into the water to float away. I could feel a coldness within myself. The dark began to take over as I questioned all that I stood for and reflected often on how I had achieved nothing. Then one day, an old man came walking into the valley with a small girl. Something stirred in me as they drew near, a memory of long ago. It had been several decades since I had last seen a person in these parts. This man reminded me of the grandmother who had helped plant me, for he walked slowly yet purposefully. They sat under my branches with their backs against my trunk and watched the water. I listened to them talk of the past, of the present, of the future. Then the little girl asked, "Is this really the source of them all, grandfather?" The old man nodded. "Yes," he replied, "and the thing is, this old tree probably doesn't even know." He smiled wistfully. "What do you mean?" asked the little girl. I too leaned in closer, listening hard. "Well, look at the bend over there," he said. "You see, this tree has no way of looking beyond this valley, of seeing past its own limited view. It has no way of knowing that for miles and miles down from here, the stream is lined with apple trees, and they have all come from this one source. For years, the tree has been faithfully dropping its apples into the stream, and the water has washed them up to places far beyond the realm of what this tree could have ever thought possible. They were quiet then, and I was too, as I reflected on what was said. This brief conversation had opened a new perspective and healed something within. They had brought lunch with them, and when they were done, the small girl dug two holes along the bank, one upstream from me and one a little way down. I saw her place something in them and cover them up. Then she came back to sit beside her grandfather, who said slowly, "Let's see what happens." As they got up to leave, I saw the old man struggling to stand. The girl reached out to help. She handed him something, and I recognized the walking stick. I made my leaves move in the wind, and I bent closer as the years of resentment fell away. I smiled down at the boy who had planted me so many years before. He also looked up at me, and he tipped his hat. Then he took his granddaughter's hand in his, and I watched them walk away. That's the end of the story. So the question that I've got at the end is, who is the apple tree in your life? So if it's okay, I'm going to give a copy to each one of you. And perhaps you can either keep it yourself, or you might choose to write the name of someone there and why they're like an apple tree for you, and then give it to them. Grandparents are probably a good example of apple trees. But I would like to encourage each of you in your lives that you are like apple trees too, and that you will be planting seeds, whether you know it or not. You might not see the results right away. It might not be a year, 10 years, maybe not even in your lifetime. But what you do matters. So make choices that are good ones so that you can become like this apple tree, and that the seeds that you plant in your life will lead to something which is beneficial and giving to other people. So thank you for the chance to share. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully that was a little bit helpful.
All right, who would like the opportunity to develop public speaking skills right now and the ability to talk off the cuff? Come up the front.
I'd like to thank you on behalf of all of our attended students here at Middleton Grange. Thank you very much for coming and speaking to us. I'm sure we all took something away from that, and we'd really like to give you the chance to say thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
Well, I do hope you enjoyed that session, Reflections on Creativity. It was meant to provoke thinking and get people talking, and I think it achieved that. So if you enjoyed this, why not send it on to one other person? And don't forget that there's like 300 plus other episodes of Seeds Podcast. Until next time, kakite ano.